Last class we finished discussing, we finished chapter 6 of Ecclesiastes, and that was the last chapter in which we were dealing, we were focused on the observations of life, the vanity seen under the sun, and it was covering man's life without enjoyment, the reasons for it, and tonight we're beginning chapter 7. Which moves into the second, the second main section of the book, in which we start applying wisdom in life. And for chapter 7, I ask you to mark all the occurrences seen of the word better. I hope you do that. It's useful to you. We note this word better, and remember that. We studied that everything in life is vanity because there's no profit, because it's fleeting, it's futile, there's nothing to be gained. Any gains are short term. So when we see the word better, we know it's discussing something is better in relation to something else. And we're going to see that throughout this chapter and in the coming chapters. And so it's verses 1 through 22 of Chapter 7, it discusses wisdom and adversity, and asks you to identify words or phrases, anything, any events that are examples of adversity or difficulty and unpleasantness in life, beginning in verse 1.
Death.
See, and death is the adversity faced in verse 1 and verse 2.
Mourning.
Yes, mourning. And also, there's another one we could mention in there. It's not as straightforward as that. Is mourning, the house of mourning?
Death again, the end of every man.
That's correct. We see the death again. This here it's phrased as the end of man. And verse 3? It's sorrow. Sadness, see a sad countenance. And verse 4. Yes, and again you see the house of mourning. 5. Yes, rebuke. Rebuke's not pleasant. Can be useful, but not always pleasant when you receive it. And in verse 7?
Oppression.
Yeah, oppression. Also,
bribery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I put mine says debasing. Debases the heart. Destroys the heart. That's not a good thing. Verse 10.
I have pleasant days.
You have what?
Pleasant days.
You too.
Because it's like the same.
You're on track. I didn't put pleasant days, but what's the thought here that?
Because you always think the formal days are better. So clearly you're thinking like present days are worse than formal days. Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's the idea that the past, they believe the past is better, so they're facing something difficult now.
So I guess not bad present days.
Yeah, just difficulties, adversities, and for past versus present. And 14. I call it the past was better. And if you ever think the past is better, that's kind of sad, because that means right now isn't as good. So. Of course, that is that may be subjective reasoning. It may not actually be true, but that's the way some people feel at times.
It's negative. 14.
Adversity.
Adversity.
And in 15.
Sorrow.
inequity of wickedness?
Sorry?
Inequity of wickedness or justice or how you want to word it?
I put the prolonging of wickedness. We don't like to see wickedness prolonged. And what else is there besides wickedness? What's happening to the righteous?
It's perishing.
They're perishing. And in verse 20.
No one's perfect.
Yeah, no one's perfect. All man sin. Just, you know, just the idea of sin here. It's something that's unpleasant. You know, sin hurts people. And of course, it's, you know, a violation of God's will. In 21.
Words that are spoken? No?
Yes.
Servant cursing.
Yeah, mine has. Yeah, servant cursing. You see, curses. Of course, no one likes to be spoken ill of, right? It, you know, we see there, you know, don't take it to heart. You know, it hurts your feelings when someone says something like that. Hurting words. And so throughout this chapter, we have all these different types of adversities, different difficulties that we find in life. And throughout the chapter, we're going to look at, through wisdom, using wisdom to understand and deal with these adversities, and also how, in some cases, these types of adversities can benefit you. You can learn from them and increase your wisdom. So you can gain some benefit from some of them, and some you may not be able to, but by understanding, more thoroughly understanding it, you know how better to handle the situation and how to deal with it. And so in beginning verse 1 through 4, we spoke of death and mourning. This section, call it death. Beginning of verse 1, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For that is the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. And so we see here in the very first verse, using that first bit, the good name is better than precious ointment, I believe that's taken as giving an example of something that's pretty much known, and leading that into the second part, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. As a good name is better than ointment, the day of death is better than the day of your birth. Death is better. Why is death better?
Because when you're born into a world of oppression.
Yes.
When you die, it's all over. You're through with this utility.
That's right. It's the you can find rest, or, you know, it's the end of the turmoil and adversity of this world, right? We talk about oppression is a form of adversity, and followed with all the other things, the sorrows of losing others and all the different difficulties in life, those end when you die.
Michael, do you believe verse 1 through 4 is a section?
Yes. Or I grouped it as such, as a common thought.
If it is, does he give a reason why he said death is better in this section?
Yes, he does. Or... I don't know. It depends how you take the question. Through this whole section, we see death, and we see in most of the verses, the other verses have to deal with mourning. And so that's not your own death, but death in life and how that benefits you to the living.
Do
But I was going to read a couple other verses that we've already discussed previously that maybe I'm grasping, taking out of context, but within Ecclesiastes, we've already discussed in chapter 4 and verse 2, where we're talking about oppression. And verse 2 says, "Therefore I praise the dead who are already dead more than the living who are still alive." And that's where we're discussing oppression, that the dead were better than the living because they're free of the oppression that all men face. Also in chapter 6, in 3 and 5, we discuss there the man without the lack of enjoyment, how the stillborn child is better than he is. 3 through 5. "The man begets 100 children and lives many years, so that the days of his years are many. But his soul is not justified with goodness, or indeed he has no burial. I say that a stillborn child is better than he. For it comes in vanity and departs in darkness, and his name is covered in darkness. Though has not seen the sun or known anything, it has more rest than that man." The man facing the difficulties of life, the one who has passed, is free of that. I think I'm stepping out of the bounds of the context of this particular section.
Suppose I read verse 1, "Death is better than the day of one's birth," and I turn to Philippians 1, where Paul said, if he wanted to die in prison, death is better because he could be out of prison, be with the Lord. Put those two verses together. Be okay?
Well, no. Then, there we're talking about two different contextual things. Here we're talking about life under the sun, versus there, I think we're talking about life after death, which is not
in view.
Is there
anything in verse 1 through 4 about escaping oppression?
No.
I just suggest, Efren asked you if you went as a unit. He said, and you correctly observed that the death here is not your own death. If it's escaping oppression, that'd be your own death.
Yeah.
But as you correctly observed, he said, "I'm going to a funeral." And he said, "Today," and you can mark out one, you see it's not in the text. "The day of death is better than the day of one's birth. It's better to go to a house of mourning than the house of feasting, because that is the end of every man, the living lays at the heart." Of course, the dead man doesn't lay anything to heart. He's dead.
Yeah.
And according to Ecclesiastes, he didn't know anything. But it's good. It's better to go to a funeral than a birthday party. Why? Because you realize that's where I'm headed. You think about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're getting to that part too. I guess, yeah, I see what you're saying. But it doesn't. We'll move on.
Well, I figured you're going to go there eventually. Yeah. I'm just saying, you've got to be careful about isolating a verse and then taking off on tangents.
Yeah.
What you're saying is exactly right about death. It is better. He's already pointed that out. The question is, in this section, is that what he's talking about? Here he's talking about wisdom for wise time. How do I cope with a time of adversity? Obviously, he's not talking about how I can cope with my own death, because when I'm dead, ain't no coping at all. Boom, I'm gone. But yeah. Here people are dying around me, and I go to funerals. Let's do it. Get me to go to funeral. I benefit by that.
Okay, I see, yeah. Better funeral than for the birth of someone else.
Yeah, we look around and say, well, that's someone else. Which all we can ever celebrate is a baby's birthday. It's bad if funerals are ruined. You know, we just got this news about Karen's daughter's funeral. She's young. But he's saying, in times of adversity, when death is taking place, there's some advantage.
Yes, there is. And we see that in verse 2 through 4. Where over and over again it talks about mourning and sorrow are better than feasting and laughter. It's better to be to mourn than it is to be in the house of feasting. Sorrow is better than laughter. Sad countenance is better. And why is it better? We sort of already touched on it. What does the scripture say why it's better? And specifically in verse 3.
Well, the face is sad, a heart is
good. Yeah.
You see, I mean, when you go to funerals, you miss that person, but on your side, you miss it, but it kind of puts everything in where it's supposed to be. You sober up real quick.
Yes, promotes sober thought. One of my points. And my verse, my translation, doesn't say happy. It says, for by a sad countenance, the heart is made better. And that could be happiness or pleasing. You know, I take it the fact that the heart is made better.
The word translated better, the rest of the Ecclesiastes. I don't know why these translators put it happy here.
Yeah.
But it's the word translated better than the rest of the Ecclesiastes.
Better to me makes more sense.
Yeah. And the King James,
from context,
the King James, young deliverer all have better.
Yeah. You see, we know going to a funeral doesn't necessarily make one happy. But from the thought, the idea that it promotes sober thought, that it brings us to the realization that, yes, this is the end of all men. This is the end of myself at some point. And then you can analyze, thinking about how best to use the time we have, knowing our time is limited. It's inevitable. This is going to occur to us as well. And so it brings us attentiveness to the reality of man's own condition, our own mortality. This results in wisdom, in a betterment of yourself. this enlightening, increasing your understanding of the situation and improving yourself, making yourself better off than what you were. And my verse says, where was that? Oh, in verse 2, it says, in the living, that's the end of all men, and the living will take it to heart. You know, it's an idea of attentive thought. You take it to heart. You dwell on it. It's with you. You go to a party. You have fun. You may be happy, but that doesn't improve your heart. It doesn't increase your wisdom, your understanding of anything. And of course, in some ways, can say, to know sadness is to makes you appreciate, when you do have joy. Mm. It's that you're not taking for granted what you have. Mm. So where's the heart of fools in these verses? The wise man's heart is in the house of mourning, and in the house of mourning is increasing in wisdom and knowledge.
Even in the house of pleasure, just think about the here and now.
Yeah.
He doesn't think what's happening.
The fool is in the here and now. He's enjoying, he's having happiness, and like I just said, happiness doesn't benefit you. and I already discussed pleasure, something that's fleeting, quickly passes away, and there's nothing you carry on with it. Any other questions, comments on this section? We got it all clear now? Yes. The next section, in beginning verse 5, discusses rebuke in 5 through 6. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of a fool. This also is vanity. We see here better than laughter, rebuke is better than the laughter or praise of fools. So does the laughter of a fool have any value at all? Or the praise? Why not? No. I heard saw some head shaking. No. It's a no, right? No. Well, why not? It's vain. It's futile. Meaning it has no result, right? There's nothing that results from it. And here we see in verse 6 it says, the song of fools is like the crackling of thorns under a pot. And I think that's taken to mean, I don't know if we don't burn fires in the suburbs here anymore, but I've burned stuff when I was out in the country. And dry thorns, they light up fast, and they crack and pop a lot. They're go out fast. If you, here we're talking, you see the pot, you know, this is how people cooked their water back then. You put a bunch of water in a pot, you light a fire under it. If the fire is made of thorns, it'll woof, it'll flare up real fast. And it'll make a whole bunch of sound, and then it's gone. And, you know, is your water boiling? Can you cook anything in yet? Is your meat roasted? No. The big result was this big poof, a lot of crackling, popping, and then nothing. Nothing, no result of what occurred. And so, yeah, the praise of a fool, it has no result. You hear it, but nothing comes from it. It's just a sound. And it's also this idea, it's quick and it's short-lived, and yeah, it quickly passes away. It's futile. So how can rebuke be useful?
When you listen to it.
Yeah, when you listen to it? In what way? Listen to what someone saying, your work is horrible.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
How is that useful?
That's possible.
Yes.
I know it's possible. I'm looking for the reasoning behind it.
It doesn't just say rebuke, it says rebuke of a wise man. So if a wise man is rebuking you, he's doing it for a reason. Like if Steve was to come up to me and rebuke me, I'd listen because I respected it, rather than if it was some little 10-year-old boy that came up to rebuke.
Yeah. So why is that?
Because he has something important to say.
He can learn from it.
Yes, we can learn from it, right?
No.
It's the idea of someone's making when you look up rebuke, it's a sharp criticism. And, you know, sharp criticism that hurts. They're saying something's wrong. And, of course, the reason why it is beneficial, I agree with everything you're saying. I was looking for that hardening of that fact. The fact that you can learn from it. Something is pointed out that's wrong, and if you listen, you can correct it. You can learn from it. You can gain from it. You see the same thing in Proverbs 13, verse 18. Verse 18, poverty and shame will come to him who disdains correction, but he who regards a rebuke will be honored. And so we see here this thought we're talking about. The one who listens to a rebuke will be honored and he'll learn. The one who does not listen, who casts that rebuke aside and the information it does contain, he will find poverty and shame. And also in 15:32 of Proverbs, he who disdains instruction despises his own soul, but he who heeds rebuke gets understanding. And so in rebuke, we can gain understanding. We can correct the faults we have. We learn. We grow. It's a way of... Rebuking can be a way of teaching. It's not always pleasant when it occurs. So that's why we have it as an adversity. It is a criticism, but it's a criticism that helps. reprimand or it's a reproof. And as David's already pointed out, I wanted to point out that specifically here we see it's the rebuke of a wise man. The rebuke of a wise man is better and can help you learn and grow. Does the rebuke of a fool have any value?
It could. Mm-hmm. Somebody can be a fool and still possibly give you some decent counsel, but you just have to have the wisdom to know what to
say. This is an utter fool. Foolish to the extreme.
Yeah, it's not.
No, he's not going to do it. No. Yeah, I mean, we're talking extremes here. There's no one who's, hopefully no one's a complete utter fool. Everyone has some wisdom. So, yeah, compared to the wise man, you may be wrong. But yeah, a fool's rebuke has no value. When you look back at Ecclesiastes 2:14, we've already discussed it. We're talking about the difference between wisdom and folly. And it discusses the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And so we know the fool, he's not wise and not understanding enough to know where he's going. he walks in darkness. And also in Matthew 15:14, where Jesus speaks to the Pharisees, says, leave them alone, or he speaks to the apostles about the Pharisees, leave them alone, they're blind guides of the blind, and if the blind guide the blind, both shall fall into the pit. You see, the fool is a person who doesn't know where he's going. He's not intelligent enough to find the correct path and go down it. And so, there's no way a fool is going to be able to rebuke you. How can he lead you when he can't lead himself? So we need to pay attention to who's rebuking us. It might matter whether we can gain something or not. I just wanted to point that out. Don't listen to those fools. And verse 7 through 10, we have oppression as the adversity. Beginning in verse 7. Surely oppression destroys a wise man's wisdom. Surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason, and a bribe debases the heart. The end of a thing is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. And do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. So what, in the very beginning, we saw the adversity as oppression. What does oppression do? What does it result in?
Frustration.
Possibly. Yeah, it could lead to frustration. What are the immediate results?
It says it makes a wise man mad. I'm not understanding that.
Mine has makes a destroys a wise man's reason. What? And yeah, that's the New American Standard. It says a wise man mad.
Yeah.
I
don't think it's mad as in angry. Mad as in
confusion of thoughts.
Yeah, it's, it goes against, I read that, we see, it destroys a wise man's reason. You can look at it in a couple ways, depending, because right after that we see, and a bribe debases the heart. And so, bribes lead to oppression. And a bribe debases the heart or destroys the heart. Talking about, a conscience. Someone has a conscience, they know what is right, what they should do, say a judge or whatever. You give them a bribe, and suddenly it destroys their conscience. They're not paying attention to their conscience anymore. They're going to do what whoever gave them the bribe to do, which, is against the wisdom. And when you look at the destroys a wise man's reason, I kind of wrestled with it. Based on the fact we see bribe right after it, you see, if there's a wise man knows what's right. Wisdom tells him, this is the judgment, this is how things should be done. And then you enter a bribe into it. If he's tempted by that, what happens to his wisdom? He was a wise man, he had it, but what becomes of his actions afterwards?
It's distorted. He perverts justice.
Yeah, it's distorted. He had the wisdom, and now it's destroyed through this bribe, through oppression. I guess the other way, if you look at it as the bribe not affecting the wise man, if it's the wise man is out there, and of course the wise man is giving wisdom, these are the actions you should do, how to live, that's going to be the most benefit to you as wise counsel. And then someone comes along who oppresses, well, that's going to destroy, it's going to make null his wisdom. Usually, you till your fields, you water at the right times, you plant at the right times, and you're going to have crops and it's going to grow. And you're gonna reap the bounty of that, right? And you're gonna have an increase, and you'll be able to take your family. And here comes oppression, boom! It takes all away, and you're like, why did I do all that work, and I get nothing? And it destroyed the wisdom and the wise counsel. I see it as both. You can take it as both, but that's how I see it. What was that? Oppression. I also wanted to read in Deuteronomy 16, verse 19. God's telling the Hebrew nation, says, you shall not pervert justice. You shall not show partiality, nor take a bribe. For a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the righteous. And also in Exodus 23, 8. You shall take no bribe, for a bribe blinds the discerning and perverts the words of righteousness. And we see the same thing in both, that in this case, it's when the wise man accepts the bribe, it destroys his righteousness. He's no longer acting righteously, and it perverts and twists his wisdom. You know, not that, you know, he was acclaimed as a wise man, but now the actions are no longer wise in nature. He's allowed bribery to influence it and change how he deals with people, no longer wisely. So what should an important thing to take here is what should a man do in the face of oppression?
Use wisdom.
Use wisdom.
Patience.
Yeah, we should practice patience, right? Patience is better than pride. You know, in oppression, someone's taking something from you. Your pride says this is wrong. You know it's wrong, and you get angry. And next verse, in verse 9, it says, do not hasten to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. we're not to get angry about it. You see, anger rests in the bosom of fools. Those who are to, you know, go get angry, are they necessarily going to act righteously? Are they going to do what is wise?
No.
No. Their anger is going to, their attitude and their anger is going to change their reasoning, and they're going to do something that it's going to influence them to be foolish, and most probably do something that will hurt themselves. Well, it hurt others, but it will hurt themselves in the end. I want to look at Proverbs 14. Proverbs 14:29 talks about wrath. He who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive exalts folly. And also in 17, a quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man of wicked intentions is hated. And so we see here, yeah, a man who is quick to anger is going to act foolishly. But we see the man who is slow to wrath, who controls his emotions, he has great understanding. The impulsive act in folly. And so that's the manner in which we should face oppression, to take it in patience, to control. You know, it certainly makes everyone angry. Yeah, but, you know, it's not condemning being angry, it's allowing your anger to control you, to consume you, to do something foolishly. You can control your anger. You can be wise. And so, that's right, skip. And also mentioned, you know, that we shouldn't pine for the past days. And, you know, in the context here, we're talking about oppression that's going on. And here's someone, you know, they get angry. They're getting frustrated. Say, you know, if this person's getting angry, we shouldn't be getting angry. We should be patient. But you get angry, and then they pine for past days. Oh, it was better back here under Bush, or it was better under Bill, or whoever. You know, things are horrible now. Whatever, you look at the past times and say, those are better than now. The adversity I face now is greater than anything I faced in the past, and this is horrible. And of course, here in the scriptures, it doesn't say that's true. We see that that's just not a wise inquiry. That's, man, I'm skipping all around here. Yeah, it's not a wise inquiry. It's a bad attitude to have. And this is, you know, discussing the attitude that we should possess. You know, if you're not patient, you allow your quick-tempered. You allow this pining for the past days, you be consumed by bitterness, resentment, and then coupled with your anger, you're most probably going to do something foolish. That, and it's not gonna help the matter at all, is it? You know, of all the, this is a reflection of how man should control his heart in the face of oppression. And we've also previously discussed oppression in chapter 5, verse 8 and 9. If you see the oppression of the poor and the violent perversion of justice and righteousness in a province, do not marvel at the matter, for high official watches over high official and higher officials over them. Moreover, the profit of the land is for all, even the king is served from the field. And we were discussing this, we were talking about how that's the state of the system that man has. Men govern over other men, and men are subject to weakness. We find oppression in all states of life. We find oppression now. You look back at past days, things are so much better then. Was there not oppression occurring then? I'm sure there was. It wasn't there. It's just the attitude of a man's heart. Allows himself to be consumed by bitterness and resentment toward the authorities who are oppressing, perhaps even toward God. It's not something we should allow occur. We're never going to be free of oppression. It's going to be here in some form or some level. Maybe a little better, maybe a little worse, but it's always there, whether you know of it or not. And if it's always there, I mean, are we just going to live in bitterness all our lives?
Some do.
Yes, some do. We're seeing here that the wise choice is not to. Understanding the state of things to help, hopefully help us to be patient, to control anger, to live our lives without that resentment, without that attitude, to be free from it. I think if you employed patience, you would be free of those outcomes. And of course, in patience, you have time to stop and think through anything, any foolish activities someone might be thinking of. What are the repercussions of that? That might not be best for me in the long run. Does anyone else have any comments in this section?
I was just going to say, when you talk about, the whole controlling your anger, I can have thinking about James chapter 1, especially verse 20. It says, "For the anger of man does not achieve righteousness of God." And I think that's an analogy we can use here, because and this is under the sun, but if you're angry, you're not serving God or doing God's will.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, that would be a good word for it. The ultimate act of foolishness, right? We're talking about the one who's angry is going to do something foolish. And, yeah, exactly. When we look at the bigger scheme of how we should be walk in God's ways, not doing what God says is foolishness. And of course, when we go backwards within the scope of life under the sun, even without life after death and the punishment and judgment, still, you're better off being patient, controlling your anger, because it'll help you live, a decent life under this oppression. Those who rise up against kings, what usually happens to them? I'm not saying this is for kings, but any authority. When you rise up against authorities, do they take that kindly?
Mm-hmm.
No, they don't. And worse off, you may lash out, if you let anger consume you, lash out at people who aren't, possibly not responsible for it at all. I guess it depends on the action taken, but we see all sorts of crazy things like that now. Moving on to verse 11 through 14, you see the adversity of poverty. Beginning of verse 11, we see, "Wisdom is good with an inheritance, and profitable to those who see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Consider the work of God, for who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed one as well as the other, so that man can find out nothing that will come after him. And so we see here, wisdom's good with an inheritance. You have some money. You have wisdom. Yeah, you can make it well for yourself. And it's profitable. We see it's profitable for a living. And of course, we have to realize that profitable, we're talking about, you know, the short duration, the fleeting nature of that profit. So it doesn't ultimately count as, you know, that which is profitable under the sun, but you have a short-term advantage. But what is it? What is the short-term advantage? What does wisdom give? What profit do we see here? Short though it may be.
It says protection.
Yes, it says protection to defense.
Yeah,
the guilty. Well, that's just that's true. It says wisdom is a defense, as money is a defense, and money can be defense. But what's the important thing it says after, right after that?
It preserves the lives.
Yeah, wisdom preserves life. The excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it, and money doesn't do that. We see wisdom here as being excelled. It's a defense and it preserves life. Also in verse 18 of chapter 9 in Ecclesiastes, it says, wisdom is better than weapons of war. So wisdom is better. Proverbs 3:13. And verse 18, tying those two together. As happy is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. 4, verse 18, she is a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happier are all who retain her. And so here again, we see that the wisdom is as the tree of life. You can preserve life through wisdom.
It's about blessing life. I was thinking about that, but I took that as true life and blessing back in the
Proverbs.
Yeah. And then in 7:14 says, be happy. I think the wisdom gives you the ability to be happy with what you have here. Enjoy those blessings and use them. Versus a fool. He's always striving after the wind. He's never going to be happy because he's never content.
Yeah.
That's how I looked at that. I'm saying that it's different than what you're thinking. That's just another.
Yeah, I suppose so. I was focusing on here, as it says, it preserves life. And so wisdom preserves life. And so wisdom is better than wealth. And we see that here. So yeah, be happy in the day of prosperity. I don't think you need wisdom to enjoy that. You can, in the day of prosperity, most people are happy. Wisdom or fool, wise or fool. But I think the point is, yes, you may have the day of prosperity, but what can occur?
Gone.
Yeah, wealth could be gone, right? You may encounter the day of adversity. And so here we're not just talking about, we're talking about an adversity, a difficulty, but in reference to that, just before, we're talking about, here's the day of prosperity, where you have wealth or, you know, possessions, whatever it is, which is good, may not be in excess, but is in some amount. And the day of adversity, right after it, where it's no longer there. It's gone. And God has appointed both. Wisdom helps preserve that life in the day of prosperity or in the day of adversity. We don't know what we're going to have, but wisdom can see you through both. I think.
Is this day of adversity, it says that man will not discover anything that will be after him, death. Is that day of adversity, is that referring to the day he dies? Because it says, man will not discover anything that will be after him. And we've studied about that earlier in Ecclesiastes.
Yes. That is there. We've studied it several times. I don't think that's talking about his day of death, that day of adversity. Because in a day of adversity, if that's the day of your death, what do you got to worry about?
Right,
exactly. Here, we're talking about living through an adversity. God has appointed it. We'll just have to get questions.